another episode of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. Coming up momentarily, our student host, Walter Pierce. But just sit back, relax, as I bring you our introduction. Music, like poetry, has a message. And history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meaning that we can comprehend like definition. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. And nowadays, more than any, that is so true. Now pull back the curtain and see the contribution, and you are surely to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, vibration. And so I say again to you, thank you for joining us to hear a different perspective of our diaspora. Now, what an introduction that is. And without any further ado, Walter, how are you?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. You already know that Quest Youth Radio is the best,
youth radio.
Yeah, and you know, this is student host right here, Walter Pierce on the mic. And I want to get into my first segment of today, which is Diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. And see, today's diamond, we're going to the music side. And we're going to be talking about a guy that a lot of people probably does not know, but they definitely know one of his songs, which is Lift Every Voice and Sing. And his name is James Weldon Johnson. And see, James Weldon Johnson was born in Jacksonville, Florida, on June 17, 1871, the son of a freeborn Virginia father and a Bahamian mother, and was raised without a sense of limitations amid a society focused on segregating African Americans. After graduating from Atlanta University, Johnson was hired as a principal in a grammar school. While serving in this position in 1895, he founded the Daily American newspaper. In 1897, Johnson became the first African American to pass the bar exam in Florida. Not long after, in 1900, James and his brother, John, wrote the song Lift Every Voice and Sing, which would later become the official anthem of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The Johnson brothers will go on to write more than 200 songs for the Broadway musical stage. Johnson then moved to New York and studied literature at Columbia University, where he met other African American artists. In 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt appointed James Weldon Johnson to diplomat positions in Venezuela. Upon his return in 1914, Johnson became involved with the NAACP, and by 1920 was serving as chief executive of the organization. Also during this period, he became known as one of the leading figures in the creation and development of the African-American artistic community known as the Harlem Renaissance. Johnson published hundreds of stories and poems during his lifetime. He also produced works such as God's Trombones in 1927, a collection that celebrates the African-American experience in the rural South and elsewhere, and the novel, The Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man in 1912, making him the first Black American author to treat Harlem and Atlanta as subjects in fiction. Based on Johnson's own life, The Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man was published anonymously in 1912, but did not attract attention until Johnson reissued it under his own name in 1927. You know, after retiring from the NAACP in 1930, Johnson devoted the rest of his life to writing. In 1934, he became the first African-American professor at New York University. Johnson died in a car accident in Maine on June 26, 1938, at the age of 67. And may he rest in peace, the great James Weldon Johnson. And that concludes my segment. Again, my name is Walter Pierce, and you are listening to Quest Youth Radio, the best youth radio. And just to talk more about, or just recap of what happened, what I talked about with James Weldon Johnson, you know, a lot of people probably didn't even know who wrote Lift Every Voice and Sing. You know, they just know the song. But, you know, the person behind it is James Weldon Johnson, and he accomplished a lot more than what people realize. You know, besides making the song, he was an advocate, and he was an advocate for writing, as you can see in the numerous books he wrote and all the how serious he took writing. And also with this, how advocate he was towards the Harlem Renaissance, you know, Harlem Renaissance being the rebirth of African American culture and African culture, I could also say, in Harlem, you know, dealing with writing, performing arts, things like that. He was a big part of that, and I'm really bringing light and bringing attention to that. So, you know, this should be somebody that should really, another person that a lot of people should start talking about, because he's a part of so much, and how much progression, and how much history and culture that we have, he's a part of, you know. And going back to the song, Lift Every Voice and Sing, you know, it's also a song that should probably end up being one of the national themes for America, because, you know, black people were people who actually, or people who are black, were the people who helped build this country. And, you know, we came here as slaves, we were taken here and brought here as slaves, and we've built this country up as it is today. So for us to actually get some recognition and to get some part in society, we need to have something apart like this, so it could give us a sense of relaxation when we know that we have some history and part of America that's being recognized. And this should be a start in something that should be included, the Negro National Anthem. It's something that is really, really prominent to our society. So thank you.
song just ended so like short, right? But that was a good introduction to Mr. Johnson. Great job, Walter. And you know, I'm just happy to have had to be able to, you know, play that particular song. Of course, that rendition done by another group, right? And you know, we're going to continue on with the program. Right now, I'm going to take the reins, and I'm going to start out by saying hazard vet forward. And what that means is full speed ahead. We will move forward as a people. I want to say happy holidays go out to everyone. And it is definitely due time for us to, you know, just take a moment and just try to enjoy ourselves in the moment and not look in the past, not look to the future, but enjoy right now, the moment. And that being said, it's time for our segment of Chains of Events, which is an interpretation of the news as it affects the community from the Alloys of Newark. It's a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. Chains of Events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, yeah, I'm talking to you, the listener, will know what's happening. Now, Chains of Events is a segment where we talk about things that are relatable. So let's talk about, briefly, the Tuskegee Institute and experiment. You see, black people in America have been used to being experimented on with vaccines. And so is the reason for so many, not just black people, but Americans, shy, outright saying they are not going to take a vaccine for COVID-19, right? And when I was asked, would I volunteer to take it? And my answer is yes. And I believe that the science is proven to where I feel comfortable enough where I trust it. And looking at what's happened to so many people as a result of this particular virus that we're all dealing with, not just in the United States, but throughout the world. And when I mentioned that a black woman was instrumental in coming up with the ingredients for the virus, you know, I still got people who were still rejecting the idea and just not trusting it, right? So, Walter, I'm going to ask you if I have the vaccine right here ready for you, man. Are you going to take it?
All right, so my answer will be not yet. And the reason I say not yet is because, of course, it's something that is just new coming out. And this is too much speculation around what people are thinking about it. And, you know, it's something that they had to create, like, in a hurry. You know what I'm saying? They it's a vaccine that had to be, of course, as much detail as possible, but also something that was needed as quickly as possible as well, ASAP. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't trust. I'm not saying it's not good for people to take it. But what I'm thinking is I believe I should waiting and seeing some of the reactions of people who took it and seeing, okay, if I see more people taking it and it's becoming actually something that is working, then, you know, why not? You might as well, if it's actually helping anything, you know, because we have to see if it's actually effective. But, you know, it was just some of the things that I've seen where, you know, because I heard also they had the vaccines. They had a batch that the first batch, I think we heard in Yaffe, New Jersey, was in Newark. You know, and that just draws eyes to, oh, they're bringing it in our communities first, one of our communities first, which just raises eyebrows and just makes you think a little bit and hesitate. You know, and, you know, you have Governor Phil Murphy actually encouraging people to come out and actually get it. But I want to see if actually these politicians are actually taking the virus as well, since they're pushing it so much. You know, I would like to see more people of that type of status who are really behind it actually start taking it. And I see them being the forefront of it, since they were the ones who actually pushed it the most. That is the one that's most needed. So, you know, I'll wait a little bit and see what happens. That's my answer.
You being the youngest person in the room, I can't help it. You know, I find humor in everything, and that's just how I get along. But I respect your viewpoint and opinion. But I will say this. We have to look at the science. But I'm going to use this as an opportunity because we have people on the line, and I'm going to bring them in. Now, if you're paying attention, right, I'm coming to 6778, 6778, and I want you to introduce yourself and let us know, will you be taking the vaccine? 6778, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, sir? Great show.
Great.
Great show. I guess the question, and I guess it needs much discussion, will I take the vaccine? Mr. Bay, I think I'm in agreement with you that I will. I think we've heard the science behind it, the fact that that what I've seen or not witnessed, but I've heard people who have contracted this virus. And I think that in this particular case, that we had took the time to understand, you know, the effects of it, what it can do and what it can't do. So I think I will be one who will probably willingly take the vaccine, primarily because of my age, too. So I think that I'm more at risk than probably the listening audience that's available. So yeah, I would. And then just listening to Walter's explanation, I guess that you know I guess majority it hasn't affected many young people enough to say, you know, let's go ahead and do this. But I think as time rolls on, and I agree with him when he says in his particular case, as far as seeing the results of what other people have from it, he will sign on it too.
Okay. Okay. We're gonna keep it moving. Thank you for your input. Right. And we're gonna go to 5671. I do believe that's Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, introduce yourself and will you take the virus? The vaccine. Not the virus.
Yeah, well, it's not. Harris, I think you did just introduce me, but yeah. I'm kind of in the middle of between y'all and Walter. You know, I understand that I'm at a high risk for age and other things, but I still have this apprehension about our government offering certain salvations for the people, and seeing that. You know, looking at our history of dealing with the federal government, it is strange to me, like Walter was saying, that they would come to us first. If there was really something that was going to be really, that they've already tested, because they really, technically, they can't have tested it the way they normally test it, because it hasn't been a time frame involved. So they're just saying, yes, it works. Take the shot. And I'm like Walter. I'm gonna be a wait and seer. You know, because if everything works out fine, I might have to be in line. And they've been talking about mandating this vaccine to certain job, curriculums, so that you're gonna have to do that in order to keep your job. They're gonna try to mandate that. You know, so it's funny. It's funny. So. I'm not sure right now. I won't take it today. I'll put it like that.
Well, I can safely say it's not available for us today.
Right.
But I did want to initiate the conversation. Right. And I wanted to put an exclamation point on the end of this by saying that there have been so many misinformation stories going around, and we have to adhere to the science. And pay attention to the factual information that's going. But I respect your viewpoint and opinion. Mr. Harris, we're going to come back to you. But before we do, we have 7035. please introduce yourself, because, you know, I have a habit of doing that for you, and let us know, will you take the vaccine?
It's Valerie, and for me, probably yes.
Okay. All right. No reasoning. You don't have to. Do you have any reasoning?
I do, but don't want to talk about it.
That's fine. That's good enough for me. We're going to keep it rolling, right? Forward in transition. Mr. Harris, you've heard Lift Every Voice and Sing, and you are our technical musical director. Now, you know what kind of songs I have here. You just don't know the Christmas songs that I have up here. But is there any particular song that you would like for me to play for you, and something that you can probably elaborate on the other end after I play the song?
Yeah, I don't know if you even have this song or not, but there was a song by the Watts Prophets that was called When the 90s Came. And, you know, they were like the little West Coast version of the Last Poets. And, you know, and they talk about things that we aspire to and we look forward to in the future. But when we saw certain things happening, we were kind of dismayed and disgusted about what we actually saw.
Wait a minute. I think I found it. Hold on to that thought, Mr. Harris.
Okay. The world really wasn't run
by crooks. On close inspection, I saw that justice and morality was no longer reality in most men's mentality.
Mentality.
Racism was well.
Alive.
Malcolm had been reduced to a commercial X.
X.
And the Panthers to a movie.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came. I saw black self-hate at a high, high, vicious rate. Vicious.
Look around.
I dug panhandlers, panhandling, panhandlers.
Got some change.
I stumbled over homeless soup kitchen, abused youth with in vogue values. Suicidal, sexed out, mixed up, Nintendo kid.
When the 90s came.
Doing violent dances. Taking deadly, deadly chances.
Deadly chances.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came.
I peeped the middle class becoming last fast.
Fast.
Network, corporate, multinational insanity has control of humanity.
Destroying
humanity.
And the world psyched into an ethnic fight.
Black and brown.
As the gun runners grow an economic might.
Red,
white, and yellow.
And the poor people struggle and fight.
Fight.
And struggle and fight. And struggle and fight. When the 90s came.
When the 90s came.
I saw smiling billboards and comedians everywhere.
Just look around.
Sprinkling mechanical laughter here and there, here and there, to hide the deadly, deadly mental despair.
Despair.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came.
Ayn Rand was inflicting pain.
Oh, that hurt.
I'd never seen such a thing. Persuasive political TV bites.
Speaking to the mic.
Take people's rights.
News at 11.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came.
I saw the world's real mass murder sitting on the highest purchase from the government to the churches.
When the 90s came.
Self-righteous high-tech killers. Robbing and raping and robbing and raping minds at prime time.
News at 11.
Mental scars, civil wars, fought in bars.
Fought in bars.
People singing hate songs of death and tribal wars. As rape women weep and children die.
Die.
Most time. For a great big law and order lie.
Law and order lie.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came.
I saw disease and pollution with no solution. As psyched out, robot, robot, in vogue mind people. Follow like sheep and weep.
Like sheep and weep.
Because of prime time.
Unreal.
Billboard computerized multimedia mentality.
When the 90s came.
Has become their reality.
When the 90s came.
When the 90s came. I learned to have hope. In the face of no hope.
I still believe.
When the 90s came.
And through all the changes, there's still some positive things happening now. When the 90s came.
Mr. Harris, elaborate on this particular group, please.
Yeah, well, this group kind of got together after the after the riots in Watts in 1965, you know, they used to have like writers' workshops with the people in the community so they can voice their opinion about the things that were going on. So they, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, you know, we had the Panthers. We had a lot of stuff going on with self-pride, and we were looking forward to the next couple of decades for a better condition for our people and stuff. And this particular song was just like when the 90s came, you know, it was like 20 years later, it was like just as bad or as worse as it was before we started. And they were asking, almost asking the question, where do we go wrong? Or what do we need to do this time that's right so that'll be better for the future? You know, it's a very thought-provoking situation.
Yes, it is.
And that being said, I'm going to transition. We're at the halfway point, everybody, right? Walter has more segments and more information. And right now, happy holidays to everyone. Don't you go anywhere. Keep it locked. You're tuned to WSOU 89.5 FM.
When you said yesterday that it's nearly Christmas, what did I want? And I thought, just love me, love me, love me. That's what I want for Christmas. When I walk through a room, let them see you need me. Walk through a room, let them see you love me, love me, love me. That's what I want for Christmas. Anyone can wish for all the trinkets in the window. Some can even buy. Take me in your arms and hold me and kiss me and say you love me, love me. That's what I want for Christmas. Hold me, kiss me.
Song goes out to everyone in the Seton Hall WSOU community, and we want to extend a happy holidays to everyone and say be safe and be in love with yourself. As we continue, Walter, what's our next segment?
Yes, and I want to continue going on with diamonds today. And this diamond, of course, a lot of people already know him. But you just need to keep hearing this story because I've seen some more stuff on him, and he just is thinking, and there's a lot of stuff, a lot of information that is really good that I really thought of. And his name is Muhammad Ali. Now, Ali was born on January 17th, 1942, in Louisville, Kentucky. His birth name was Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. At an early age, young Clay showed that he wasn't afraid of anybody, inside or out of the ring. Growing up in the segregated South, he experienced racial prejudice and discrimination firsthand. At the age of 12, Clay discovered his talent for boxing through an odd twist of fate. After his bike was stolen, Clay told a police officer, Joe Martin, that he wanted to beat up the thief. Clay started working with Martin to learn how to spar, and they soon began his boxing career. In his first amateur bout in 1954, he won the fight by a split decision. Clay went on to win the 1956 Golden Glove Tournament for novices in the light heavyweight class. 3 years later, he won the National Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions as well as the Amateur Athletic Union's national title for the light heavyweight division. In 1960, Clay won a spot in the U.S. Olympic boxing team and traveled to Rome, Italy to compete. At 6'3", Clay was an imposing figure in the ring, but he also became known for his lightning, quick speed, and his fancy footwork. After winning his first three bouts, Clay defeated a fighter from Poland to win the light heavyweight Olympic gold medal. After his Olympic victory, Clay was honored as an American hero. He soon turned professional with the backing of the Louisville sponsoring group and continued overwhelming all opponents in the ring. Clay joined the Black Muslim group Nation of Islam in 1964. At first, he called himself Cassius X before settling with the name Muhammad Ali. The boxer eventually converted to Orthodox Islam during the 1970s. Ali started a different kind of fight with his outspoken views against the Vietnam War. Drafted into the military in April of 1967, he refused to serve on the grounds that he was practicing Muslim minister with religious beliefs that prevented him from fighting. He was arrested for committing a felony and almost immediately stripped of his world title and boxing license. The U.S. Department of Justice pursued a legal case against Ali, denying his claim for constituent objector status. He was violating selective service laws and sentenced to 5 years in prison in June of 1967, but remained free while appealing his conviction. Unable to compete professionally in the meantime, Ali missed more than three prime years of his athletic career. Ali returned to the ring in 1970 with a win over Jerry Quarry, and the U.S. Supreme Court eventually overturned the conviction in June of 1971. Often referring to him as the greatest, Ali was not afraid to sing his own praises. He was known for boasting about his skills before a fight and for his colorful descriptions and phrases. You know, a lot of people probably in the call could relate to some of these fights, you know. Me being a young person, you know, people like Sonny Liston, Joe Frazier, I only was able to, like, watch little clips and read about it, but, you know, I always heard about that Frazier, Ali versus Frazier fight, you know, went to round 15, which Ali ended up handing Frazier his first professional loss. You know, he took a couple losses as well. You know, he ended up also fighting George Foreman. We ended up giving an 8-round knockout, even though he was an underdog in that fight as well. You know, and he continued to fight, and he also ended up retiring a little bit after. And he also married his wife, including he married his second wife, which was 17-year-old Belinda Boyd, in 1967. And Boyd and Ali had all four children together as well. You know, and then, of course, later on in 1984, Ali announced that he had Parkinson's disease. And despite the progression of Parkinson's and the onset of spinal stenosis, he remained active in public life. Ali raised funds for the Muhammad Ali Parkinson Center in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was on hand to celebrate the inauguration of the first African American president in January of 2009, when Barack Obama was sworn into office. But a few years before his death, Ali underwent surgery for spinal stenosis, a condition causing the narrowing of the spine, which limited his mobility and ability to communicate. And, you know, his philanthropy, you know, Ali, just besides his outspoken views about things and, you know, his boxing, of course, he was still somebody who was a huge advocate for people. And, you know, he participated in a lot of different foundations, Make-A-Wish Foundation as well. He supported all of these little things that always helped people in the world. He was a big advocate for that. And, you know, in 2005, he also received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President George W. Bush. and he received the President's Award from the NAACP for his public service efforts. You know, and he died actually June 3rd, 2016, as a lot of us know already. But really, just the main purpose and the way Ali just lived his life and the ideas just showed how much, how he was always right. He always stuck to his opinion. He wasn't somebody who was going to be persuaded by anybody, and he was somebody who was very controversial to a lot of people. You know, going back to Vietnam was probably one of the biggest controversial statements he said during that time for a lot of people. For me, it really shouldn't be that controversial. I understand even though a lot of people might disagree, I understand why a lot of people from America probably disagreed and thought he was just crazy and this was a terrible statement he made. But you have to really think of it from the perspective of he really didn't believe going all the way over to Vietnam and going and killing other people. That's just not what he was about, and he didn't think that was right at all. He was very outspoken about that, about him not going there. And, you know, that's what led to people him being arrested. And, you know, it's just it's interesting to me why they were arresting for refusing to do that. But you just have to think about America during that time period. You know, they were going through a lot of wars back in that time period. You know, you know how America is with wars and always confrontation and love. If you don't agree with the white man's thinking in America during that time, then you were somebody who was an enemy, somebody who, like Muhammad Ali, should be thrown in prison. Or if you wasn't a white person during that time period, there was just always this continued discrimination. And him being the person he is, speaking out like that and being also a person of color, this really was something that really scared them, because a lot of people listen to what he had to say. And, of course, if he says something like that, other people who look up to him are also going to follow in his footsteps and follow in his thinking. So, which makes me think that, you know what, they were so scared of him, they had to arrest him and try to silence him about them type of things, because they wanted their persona to be pushed and not somebody as Muhammad Ali was. But, you know, just Muhammad Ali wasn't having that. He was always an outspoken person, even on the boxing ring, where he was very successful, a lot of memorable fights, but also outside of it. He was not scared of that moment, and I really appreciate him for that, because it was a video I seen on his thinking and just on really based on his lifestyle and how he just cared for people and cared for the betterment of his country. So, yeah, I want to just thank biography.com, and, you know, you're listening to WSOU on 89.5, because youth radio is the best youth radio. And this is co-host Walter Pierce. Thank you.
Absolutely. The co-host, student host in charge. Mr. Harris, what are your memories of the greatest of all time?
Yeah, well, there was so many. I'll just break it down to a couple. You know, his legendary fights that he had with Joe Frazier, that little trilogy all the way down to the Thriller in Manila. But the one, the actual fight that really got me, like, really tied up was the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman, where everybody in the world was like, you can't beat this guy, there's something wrong with you even trying to fight him, you're going to get killed in the ring. And Muhammad Ali in the ring, as like Walter was saying, even outside the ring, he had a way of focusing on a certain task, and he always makes it happen, regardless of who was against him. He would never take no for an answer. So he knocked out George Foreman. When they took away his boxing credentials, he stuck it out, and they wind up reversing that call in court, you know. And the philanthropy, see, people, like Walter was saying, people don't know about his philanthropy. You know, he was a brother that was known all over the world. You know, there was no place that you can go and people never heard of Muhammad Ali. You know, and it was that plus his religious convictions that made him the greatest of all times, not just in the ring, but also in life. And, you know, those, you know, just thinking about it makes me smile.
Okay.
And there is the Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was actually a recipient of some of his grace for a Muhammad Ali Peace Garden. I was able to receive a grant and expose young people to the opportunity to be able to plant and grow and learn about gardening firsthand because of the grant that his organization and he provided. And I was proud, and even to this day, still proud to be a recipient of that particular grant. Out of hundreds of people, I was one that was chosen to receive that particular grant. And at that time, it's just so funny how people will sometimes be surprised of your capabilities because I was asked, frankly, did you write that grant? Somebody did that for you? Well, you know, being inspired by so many great people and being motivated by the history and the struggle that we have gone through, sometimes it's very easy to show leadership for a different type of change and a different type of understanding and just push on and do things that you wouldn't expect yourself to do. And that is just enough for a transition. Walter, you have another segment for us? Or wait a minute. I'm going to play another song, Mr. Harris. I know you talk about me playing the same songs all the time, but here's one by DJ Cassie Guest, canceled 2020, so it's almost over, everybody. And I want to say again, happy holidays. Keep it locked.
COVID gon' still be here. Top sign still up in my rear. Baby mama got the news, now she all on her knees. Cause I didn't stop when they said freeze. I must admit, I thought this year be a blast. Every night I will be raising the glass. On tour straight, making a stash. But instead, I'm watching this race to sass. Little kid raising rifle to blast. Killed two people and the cops let them pass. It wasn't that kind of to me. That wasn't even this year. Yeah, the past year's been whack. Hunting season on everything black. Speaking of black, lost black hand to the king. Somebody please take 20 back. Chad knew and was planting the seed. Leave a legacy that these kids need. We had a superhero right here. promise that we could do the same.
And Walter, we're back. You have more comments about Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time?
You know what? I just want people to really listen to somebody like Muhammad Ali. And, you know, the reason I want somebody just to listen, you probably won't agree with everything he says, but he's a person that you're going to want to listen to just get different perspectives about life and different people's ideas on things. So, like, he's just a perfect person, I believe, if you want to just learn about, like, learn, get knowledge about life and people's perspectives. But to continue, I want to go into my definition for today. And the intro for definitions is this segment provides the listener with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And, you know, today's definition is artist. And, you know, the reason I pick artist, you know, when people think of artist, somebody, they think of somebody who's a painter, somebody who's a singer, dancer, something with the performing arts field. You know, even the Google definition I even pulled up was like one who possesses and practices an imaginative art, a person skilled in one of the fine arts, you know. So like the performing arts, again, as I said, that is either visual with dancing, singing, painting, things like that. But I believe that somebody's artist could go deeper because I believe artists, it helps paint an image. It helps create an image for somebody, create imagination. And if you're doing that as an artist, helping people imagine things, just picturing things while they're listening, visualizing, whatever they're doing with your art, then I believe that you could be considered somebody who's an artist. You know, going on to the example, of course, somebody like James Weldon Johnson, who was in the performing arts, who had a song, and also with his writing, can also be an art form because when you read his work, it can help you visualize and come up with ideas on things, and it gives you perspectives. And, you know, also him helped in the Renaissance movement, the Harlem Renaissance. Of course, that dealt with a lot of performing arts as well, and just it just brought more life to the African-American community. You understand what I'm saying? But also somebody, again, like Muhammad Ali, which some people might not think of, you know. Somebody like Ali who was a boxer. You know, boxing could definitely be an art form. You know, you could take a picture. There's many pictures of Muhammad Ali boxing, and just one of those pictures could just, as people say, are worth a thousand words. You know, like just any picture. Somebody could just see a fight of him, and they could go off the top of what happened, how this fight happened, all of that. That can be seen as also an art form. You know, the things he has to do, the movements. It's just like people say poetry in motion, as a lot of people put it. The way he moves in the boxing ring, the way he moves his hands, he moves his feet, he dodges things. It just creates art that just has somebody who visualizes just think really and just be in awe. You understand? So like, that's what I believe, why he could also be considered an artist. as well. So, you know, that's really what I wanted to bring to light. I just wanted to have people just go into, not just think of art or performing art as just somebody who's an artist. I believe that somebody who even, as something James Weldon Johnson and Muhammad Ali did, even if you're going into other sports, you know, basketball, football, things you do in that nature, even golf, you know, it's just while people watch it, they always just think, and they could be in awe if somebody's good enough, and they just something they probably never seen before, and they're just surprised and just love watching it, because you know people watch art as well. So that's what I think you can also include for somebody who's an artist as well.
Poetic artistry done by the creative, abstract, visual, just like you said.
I totally agree.
And back in the day, watching Muhammad Ali, it was like a work of art. I totally agree. I want to see if I have more Christmas music. And then we're going to come back and wrap up our show. Oh, this is something else.
Oh, you think not? On close inspection, I saw that justice and morality was no longer reality in most men's mentality.
Mentality.
Racism was well.
Alive.
Malcolm had been reduced to a commercial X. And the Panthers to a movie.
When the 90s came,
I saw black self-hate at a high, high, vicious rate. Vicious.
Look around.
I dug panhandlers, panhandling, panhandlers.
Got some change?
I stumbled over homeless soup kitchen abused youth with in vogue values. Suicidal sex out, mixed up, Nintendo kids.
When the 90s came.
Doing.
Throw away your trouble, leave your blues behind. Throw away your trouble, leave your blues behind. Throw away your trouble, leave your blues behind.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes left to our program, and I just want to say
In summation of today's show, I send a shout out to everyone at Seton Hall University and WSOU. I want to thank the staff of WSOU for allowing us to, even during the pandemic, be able to bounce back and be here. I want to also, as I go back, I want to say to everyone out there, do the research, find out the facts. Don't just listen to anything that you see or hear on social media. Talk to a doctor, a scientist, go to a Zoom, find out the facts about the vaccine before you completely rule it out. But by all means, please continue to wear your mask, social distance, and I want to say hazard, zet, forward. And I just want to give a moment to our number one fan. What did you think about the show, Val?
The show was excellent, and you talked about my all-time favorite sports figure, Mr. Muhammad Ali. I remember as a kid, man, I think we saw every fight he ever had. Do you remember, if you grew up in Newark, remember when they had the street naming? I think it was 18th Street. It was renamed Muhammad Ali, and he came, and they, you know, we had the celebrations, you know, for that. And I remember a long time ago, I think the second time I saw him in person was when he came to an appearance at Club 88 in East Orange. But I'm telling you, the year, I'm sorry, one more thing to say. The year he passed away, I went to the Ali Center in Kentucky, and boy, is that a beautiful tribute to him. Fantastic.
Okay.
And they were still under construction, so maybe next time I go, I'll see even more things. Fantastic.
Okay. All right, Mr. Harris, any questions or comments about today's show? We're wrapping it up quickly.
Yo, I just wish I was as excited as Val was just then, because I feel the same way about the brother. Excellent show.
All right. Walter, wrap it up quickly. Take us out of here.
You know, I just want to thank everybody for listening to an amazing show today. You know, even under the circumstances and disagreements we had, the conversation, everything was just always good. I hope everybody learned something from this show. And again, to close it out with our motto, Quest Youth Radio is the
is
best.
The best
youth radio. All right. And that does it for another episode. Until next Saturday, we'll see you. Thank you for joining Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibration. Peace.